Cruising down a back road, strapped a heavy load. With my trusty old sidekick, we're on the outlaw road. Dust clouds rising, sun beating on all our skin. A couple good old boys never let the law win.
Hey, Ben, welcome back. How's the trip?
It was good. In some ways, it was long because it was over two weeks, and then short because it was, you know, not a lot of time in any given place. So
Right.
It was a whirlwind for sure.
Well, it was, what, 2 weeks?
Yeah, 2 weeks.
That's substantial.
Yeah, it's a long time to be in foreign countries.
Yeah, it's nice, huh?
Yeah. By the way, I want to give a shout out to the UAE passport control guy who not only didn't stamp my passport on a sequential page, but stamped it right in the middle of the page. Asshole.
You'll get plenty of those.
Oh, yeah. Just because he could, you know. Fuck you.
They just don't care.
No, they do not.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah. You got plenty of stamps, though.
I've got a few.
You just didn't get the British one.
I did not, but, yeah. You know, it's okay.
You'll be back. That's all right.
I got a German one. I got a Greek exit stamp. I got a Doha or Qatari barcode sticker followed by an exit stamp, and then UAE.
You didn't get Spain?
I'm sorry?
Spain?
No, because I was inside the Schengen zone. So travel inside the Schengen zone there's no passport control.
Oh, really?
Yep.
Didn't used to be that way. It used to be for Americans, you'd still get passport stamps.
Nope. Inside the EU, there is no passport control. It's like a domestic flight. They do validate that you have your passport and things like that, but nah. Hmm. No stamp.
Oh, well. That's all right.
Yeah, I got to tell you, out of all the places I went, Athens is definitely the one I would pay to go back to.
Going back there, huh? Okay.
Yep. Qatar feels fake as crap. Mm-hmm. And is a total panopticon. Did I send you the video of my hotel room in Qatar?
I don't recall.
All right, I'll have to send it to you. So I was on a diplomatic floor in this hotel, which was weird. And you walk in, and as soon as you get off the elevator, it's like a spaceship. Like, it's total sci-fi. And, you know, under surveillance and all that. And you walk into the room and it's, you know, got high ceilings. It's nice, but it's a total white spaceship. It was a freaky, freaky room. Yeah.
White is good.
I guess.
So when you go into Riyadh.
Hopefully I'm not, but we'll see. We're working on a.
You got to complete your Middle Eastern trip.
Yeah. We're working on a thing for a Saudi company right now. So who knows?
Mm-hmm.
No, my next most likely international trip right now is looking like South Africa.
Mm-hmm.
So that'll be fun.
Yeah, well, given how things are completely falling apart there.
Yeah, right.
They're having brownouts on a regular basis now.
Yeah. I'm definitely tagging the company security and being like, y'all are going with me. But yeah, the trip was good. It was, you know, crazy quick thing, but got it done. So
where shall we start? Do you want to start with the banks or something else?
Actually, I want to start with the engineering of an EMP that you sent me.
Oh, yeah, sure.
That guy's an idiot.
Okay.
So one of the things that tells me he knows nothing about the power grid is he kept spelling out the acronym for EPRI. Mm. I have been a member of EPRI, and it's called EPRI, for the love of God. And the tests that they did, while controversial, and for people who don't know, this is EPRI released a paper a while back talking about the potential effects of a EMP generated by a nuke in low Earth orbit on the power grid. And he keeps saying, you know, maybe it wouldn't be that bad and so on. He's totally misunderstanding how A, grid stabilization works, and B, how a instantaneous surge over, you know, a couple potentially 100 miles would knock off, not, you know, he talked about and we'll put a link in the show notes or something, but he talked about, you know, oh, the grid can be resilient, this, that, and the other. Bull crap. You know, first of all, you're going to knock a lot of generators off that are at all on that transmission line. So the generators are going to go off. So now you have much less power available on the network. And then your demand hasn't necessarily gone anywhere. And then you have the induction of DC voltage on transmission lines, which would wreak havoc with transformers. I mean, there are lots of things. And while his premise that likely the equipment will survive and so on, that's possible. I will grant him that.
Well, this is not his area of expertise. He's got a PhD in astrophysics.
Okay, well, good for him. But my point is, a sufficient EMP to do what Epri was talking about would cause massive grid destabilization just from a grid management standpoint. So like ERCOT's management of power load and distribution. And you would have at least a regional blackout. Now, I can tell you that inside
by
ERCOT,
region, you mean Ohio?
Yeah, a large area.
Everything happens.
Yeah. Now, I will tell you that if something like that happened to ERCOT, the likelihood of ERCOT going into a black start is extremely high.
Oh yeah,
just because of our isolated nature, and you know, if you lost all of a sudden 15-20% of ERCOT's grid, I mean, you're done.
Now, my understanding is that the best way to position a nuclear generated EMP device is via balloon launched from Mexico.
I don't know about launched from Mexico, but
I read that somewhere. I don't know.
A high altitude balloon is definitely one of the options, especially considering that aircraft have a hard time getting up to altitude.
Yes.
You know, we don't have a bomber that could do an airburst that's detonation at a high enough altitude.
Right.
So, yeah, balloon would definitely be one. ICBM would be another.
Mm-hmm. Sure. Yeah, yeah. But I mean, short of ICBMs, more like unfriendly kind of a non-nuclear war starting event.
Oh, I think if someone detonated an EMP or there was radiological material on the balloon.
Yeah, but it's probably just some rented balloon from Poland that's registered in Ukraine. So who knows?
Yeah, well, if there was a balloon flying over U.S. territory with radiological material on it, number one, you could detect that. And number two,
60,000 feet? No fucking way.
If you're close enough to it, sure. We've got some pretty sensitive detectors, dude.
Well, how are you going to get close to it?
Flight.
You're going to be able to detect it by zooming past it at 700 miles an hour?
Yes. Depending on the shielding and so on, yes. So if we're talking about someone like Russia or China doing this, maybe not, because they will have enough experience to have a well-shielded warhead that, you know, would not give off a huge radiological signature. But if we're looking at, you know, we could say North Korea or something like that, then that's likely to be different.
They have yet to get a balloon that stays up further than Japan.
You mean a North missile?
Korea. No, balloon. Huh. Like their balloon tech is not sufficiently good enough to have a balloon last that long.
Well, I'm sure they could buy it from China.
I'm not sure China wants to sell that to them.
Yeah, well,
I think America overestimates the friendliness of China and North Korea.
True. China sees North Korea as a vassal state and nothing but labor source.
Worse than that, it's an occasionally useful but mostly annoying vassal state.
Yes, it's the annoying little brother, if you would.
Mm-hmm. It's the one that runs around kicking everybody in their shins and then goes and hides behind you.
Yes.
It's that kind of brother.
So, you know, it was interesting because there were some leaks that came out, and I'm trying to remember the U.S. officer who was quoted, but there was a memorandum sent out, I believe it was Air Force, that was predicting that due to the elections, 2024 would be when we fought the Chinese over Taiwan. So
we'll see.
Yeah. Yeah, I remember that. Anything else in that video that caught your eye?
No, it was just really annoying, his EPRI comments, because, again, being in the industry and knowing it, you know, I've got some friends who were actually involved with that EPRI study, so.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Yep.
Gotcha.
So, do you want to go to the banks or Ukraine?
We can go to the banks. Let's do that.
Okay.
Actually, before we go to the bank, I was going to mention now, find it here. Where is it? It is. Oh, here it is. So for anybody that wants to protect themselves against an EMP strike, if you go to empshield.com, you can get a discount on an EMP shield by using the discount code GRIFTCAST.
Yeah.
It'll get you 10% off of the
shield. It'll totally work.
It is. It is approved by the Department of Homeland Security. And it is.
I would like to see a publication on DHS's website.
They have approved this. This was designed per DHS spec. They're pretty reasonably priced. They're built to MIL standard 188-125-1, as well as MIL standard -451G.
Gene, you have no shame. You're shameless.
So 10% off if you get it. That's a great deal. I recommend everybody have at least a couple of those in their house. Mm. And the best thing is there's a $20,000 insurance policy in case it doesn't work.
Yeah, because if it doesn't work, you won't be able to collect.
That's the point. It's a great deal. Anyway, let's move on.
Yes. So Silicon Valley Bank.
Yeah.
That's actually a big one, yes. The ripple on effects, I don't think a lot of people understand because, you have startups, some of which that I used to work for, that have money in Silicon Valley Bank. Adam and John were talking about, and this is something I was unaware of, but apparently in a lot of venture...
Contractually obligated, yeah.
Yes. In venture capital funding, sometimes there are covenants in there that require you to use SVB. I know of several companies that had hundreds of millions in that bank, and they're definitely scrambling, and we'll see if they make payroll tomorrow.
Yeah, I think with the companies that I have direct connection to through friends, it's about 386 million right now.
Yeah.
Which is not a small amount of money.
And what a lot of people don't realize is we're going to see a culling of the herd of startups right now.
I was hoping for that, but I'm really not sure that's going to happen simply because it really seems like the FDIC is pledged to cover to make everybody whole regardless of, regardless
of size. They haven't yet.
No, but the pledges were something. I mean, if you look at the market, I don't think it's really dropping the way that it would had they not said that.
Well, I hope you're right because I just exercised some shares in a former company. So, hopefully they don't go defunct.
Well, I hope I'm right for your sake, but really I kind of hope I'm wrong because the problem is there's no penalty for failure. As long as you're a friend of Democrats, you can fail all you want and you fail up.
Yeah. And, I agree
with
you.
They have an A+ ESG score.
Yes, I'm aware. And we'll I think we can get into the ESG stuff here in a second because there's other contractual obligations I know of in some of the venture capital funding, especially from like BlackRock and so on. Mm-hmm. But one of the issues we have, again, tomorrow's the 15th, and a lot of companies are going to be scrambling to make payroll.
Yeah.
So it'll be very interesting to see what happens there. I think if FDIC hasn't put enough liquidity in there for at least payroll, then you're going to see several startups go under just because of that. I mean, people are going to revolt.
Well, they can try.
Well, I know several people who work for startups who are watching to see if they get paid tomorrow, and if they don't,
yeah. But anybody that quits a startup if they miss one payment of salary, probably somebody I would have fired anyway.
Why is that?
Because those people live too close day to day. They're going to be problematic. They're more susceptible to getting lucrative offers to jump ship in a heartbeat. You want people that can absorb a little bit of fluctuation that work for startups. Now, for large companies, you don't need that. But if you're in a startup, you want to place a premium on people that can actually deal with the up and down waves.
Yeah, what I would say is some of the people who I'm talking to who are planning on potentially jumping ship are extremely financially stable. They are not people who live paycheck to paycheck by any stretch. It's a thought of the mismanagement.
Reasons for them to do it then.
When you have some startups keeping literally the entire company funds in one bank account in one bank.
Yeah, that's just stupid.
Well, the finance officer needs to be fired.
Yeah.
At the very least.
Yeah, I mean, making payroll is pretty important. And for a lot of companies I work with, when if you find yourself in that position where you're a week out and you can't make payroll, you stop focusing on everything else and you get a bridge loan. You secure something immediately so you can cover that payroll. And then you spend the next 2 weeks trying to figure out how to stabilize that position. But generally, yeah, unless your company is like got shit credit, most companies can get a bridge loan for payroll in just a signature.
Yeah. It also depends on how big their payroll is.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
There are some companies that are offering to step in for some companies as well. So there's a lot of interesting things going on around that.
I know somebody I don't know if Musk himself, actually, I think he did say it. I saw a tweet. He's contemplating buying Silicon Valley Bank.
Yeah, that was thrown out there. And, you know, given what he's trying to do with Twitter and potentially turning it into
X.com.
A bank, you know, that would be a vehicle to do it. But I don't know that he wants it. I don't know that he needs it. I don't know why he would buy it, you know.
Well, I know why he wants it. I was part of his bank the first time around. I actually had an account there. And I think that what's interesting to me is the sort of conspiracy theory stuff in terms of how this instability at Silicon Valley Bank came about.
Go on.
Well, now, I don't know how accurate or true or how much it covers, but the story has been floating around that Peter Thiel is the guy that really kind of ensured that they would be upside down by last week telling a whole bunch of people to pull money out of there.
Yeah, he was definitely part of that. He did
put out,
of course,
Peter Thiel was Elon's partner.
Yeah, he did put out some information saying that, you know, Silicon Valley, to pull your accounts, and people did.
So I wonder if this was a coordinated move to get that bank to go under to be able to buy it for cheap.
I don't know that I buy that.
Well, like I said, it's a little conspiratorial, but you know, it's fun.
Yeah. So ESG and, you know, the social governance aspect of this, the fact that they had an A rating is somewhat interesting, but, you know, without really looking at the books, was that used as a lending decision? Was that part of why they had made potentially risky investments? You know,
well, let's start with this. Are there any non-risky investments that would get you an A rating?
Potentially. But, you know, I mean, are you assuming that all companies that check the diversity box are risky?
Yeah.
Why?
Because decisions are not made based on business grounds. They're made based on social outcome grounds. So it's basically you're competing on a different playing field when you do that. You're not competing with people that are hiring purely based on merit. You're competing with people that are also hiring based on diversity. And incidentally, it's not just like, you know, ethnic diversity. It's also generation diversity, how much crap generation you have versus solid proven colon gas. They're basically decisions that are for the quote unquote good of the planet versus good of your.
Yeah. Or it could just be something as simple as hiring decisions and things like that.
Yeah. But I mean, it's a combination of all those things, I think.
Okay. So the bank that holds my mortgage is pretty much at their 5-year average. So they're not going to fail. Damn it.
Here, I'm going to send you the link to the SVG report on their ESG. The SVG ESG is what I just sent you. We can look at that later. But yeah, I think the bottom line is like the bank would not have gone under for any single one of these things. I think this is a combination of multiple factors that led to and incidentally, I'm still a little confused exactly on how it went under. I guess it's just liquidity because its assets were like $300 million higher than its
liabilities.
Yeah.
Well, it was just a run on the bank. They didn't have enough to cover deposits.
But that shouldn't make the bank go out of business. I mean, they should just shut down early for the day.
Right, but that's when the FDIC stops, comes in and says, okay. Yeah. So part of it was liquidity, and then part of it was what really started to signal to people, you know, the issues is because they had invested in quite a few 10-year bonds at a cheaper interest rate than current.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And they were doing a fire sale to try and cover the withdrawals.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
And it looks like the British bank HSBC bought the overseas operations.
Oh, really? I think I used to have some accounts with them. Huh. Interesting. So, I don't know. We'll see what happens. I think that people are a little confused by, like, trying to take their money out of regional banks and then moving them to national banks. I would say that national banks are less secure. There's a higher percentage of chance that if a national bank does go under, that there's going to be a compromise deal and you're going to get screwed.
There is a potential. And
now, if you've got under 250K, it may not matter.
Yeah, and that's something for people to consider is how much they have in each individual institution and account. And you have to remember also that it's per signer, right? Mm-hmm. So having a bunch of bank accounts at one bank doesn't necessarily protect you.
Yeah, absolutely. And also, don't forget that it's not just having accounts, it's also the liquidity aspect. Like, one of the things that we saw with both this bank and the other two that shut down is that the availability of liquidity to a number of exchanges of cryptocurrency have been severely impacted by this. Because those were the banks they were using for their transactions to convert crypto into US dollars.
So if you're being conspiratorial, it might even be a thought that especially Silicon Valley Bank would be a hit job on Bitcoin potentially because of the exchanges.
That may be, but I think it's fairly unlikely given that it is very highly tied into the Democrat machine. And I think that the idea of anybody be willing to dump their friends that they have brunch with on Saturdays in order to jostle the ability of people using crypto to liquidate that crypto, I think it's a little too far for Occam's razor.
Okay.
And it's also going to be interesting to see if there's any conversations in the next month or so about the national cryptocurrency coming out.
Yeah, well, the Fed hasn't said anything, but there have definitely been feelers put out about a central bank digital currency. So,
Yeah, because I think anything that happens in the banking sector allows them an opportunity to present this as a solution to a problem.
Well, I think the problems would have to get much worse before that would be a solution.
You're really just trying to give them ideas at this point, aren't you?
I'm just saying it would have to be a lot worse before the public would, you know, go along with a revaluation of the dollar. Because that's fundamentally what it would be.
I think it's an easy sell. I think all you got to do is you roll it out right now and you say 100% covered by the United States government. Like, if you have money in the bank, only the $250,000 of that is covered and the rest you're likely to lose.
Mm-hmm.
If you have money in U.S. digital dollar, which is not just backed by the U.S. government, but it's not a bank. It's not tied to any bank. It's literally money owned by the U.S. government. I think you could get away with convincing people pretty easily.
Yeah, but then the problem is the reason why I don't think the Fed would do that directly is you're cutting out the middleman on lenders. So we're absolutely totally, if we go to a central bank digital dollar, one of the things we would be doing would be, you know, essentially transforming our banking system, and that's a huge part of the economy.
Yeah, we'd be nationalizing our banking system, which I think is something that the same people that want all the progressive politics coming to the U.S. that have been winning lately, I think they're all for that. I think that a state command economy with a state-operated banking system is very much in their plans.
Well, that's a scary thought. Because I don't know. I just think that there's enough of the donor class to those people who, you know, are in finance and working in the banks.
Yeah, but again, I think the the idea here is that it's for the little people. It's not for us. Like, we'll still be able to do banking overseas. They won't. We just won't be able to do banking in the U.S.
Okay.
Oh, we'll see. It's all interesting to watch. You know the way I operate is I throw something that sounds very, like, wild out there.
Mm-hmm.
And then a year goes by or a couple of years goes by. And it's like, oh, look, I predicted that 2 years ago. Shit's actually happening. And speaking of shit happening, what about Mexico joining BRICS? That seems like an interesting idea.
Yeah, I don't know that that's actually going to happen, but...
I think the U.S. would very much like to prevent that from happening.
I think the U.S. would engage militarily. But on what grounds?
I mean, they're a sovereign country. They're allowed to do whatever they want. I mean, I can't imagine the U.S. as a neighbor. They're a failed narco
state.
Okay, and Ukraine was a failed what?
Hey, don't disagree.
Yeah.
And what is Russia doing?
I'm just saying that this is this is completely predictable. I talked about it in I think it was on Sergine Speaks about 7 or 8 months ago, is that the by supporting Ukraine from 6,000 miles away, the U.S. is really opening itself up for retribution done in exactly the same way by both China and Russia.
Well, it will be interesting to see what happens.
Yeah, that you and I also talked about it more recently, but I just want to make sure that, like, I talked about it way back when.
Well, it would be interesting because it would, you know, I don't know how they can join BRICS without violating NAFTA.
I thought we got rid of NAFTA. Didn't we get rid of NAFTA recently?
Well, we've got NAFTA 2 in place, which is binds Mexico and Canada closer to the U.S., so it wouldn't be clear to me that they could join BRICS, given that trade alliances.
I don't know that there's anything in NAFTA to prevent them from joining BRICS.
We have sole, I believe in NAFTA too, we have sole most favored nation status.
Okay. Because the thing about BRICS is it's a loose conglomeration. So it doesn't impose a whole lot of requirements on nations that want to join it.
Yeah, but it opens up some trade deals that I think NAFTA, too, would potentially prohibit.
Mm-hmm. Well, I wouldn't be surprised if it's not in there because I don't think anybody in the U.S. ever thought that there's any risk of Mexico being friendly with China or Russia.
Maybe.
But I have to admit, I've not read NAFTA, too, so I can't say one way or the other without reading it first.
Yeah, so it's interesting because I see the news on Twitter, and I'm trying to see if there's anything on it, but there's no major news story about Mexico joining BRICS.
Oh, no. It's only news that I've, the only sites that I've looked at that have that are Indian, Chinese, and Russian.
Very interesting. So they're
BRIC Nation sites.
Yes, exactly.
I'm not sure anybody in the U.S. even knows this is going on.
Well, go ahead.
No, I was going to say, but I think that this, like, they don't even need to join BRICS, right? All that needs to happen is for the issue of Mexican freedom of trade with other nations, such as BRICS, to become a political issue in Mexico. And that will be enough destabilization to get the U.S. involved in a military action.
Yeah, and I think we...
Well, ultimately, it's all... I think that would make both Russia and China happy.
Well, it would certainly distract from, you know, Taiwan.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Yeah, which I watched the video you sent to me about Taiwan.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought it was pretty good with just a couple of small exceptions or areas that I think the guy missed.
Okay.
One is he didn't talk at all about India, and India, both with Russia and with China, have increased trade. With Russia, they're importing a hell of a lot more crude oil and are in the process of building the largest refinery in the world. So, like, not mentioning either of those situations, I think it either dates the video, like he finished it way like a year ago and then just published it recently. Or he's just neglecting it because he's unaware of it. I don't know. But yeah, I've been saying for a long time that up until recently, and probably up until, let's say, 15 years ago, Russia had way more nukes pointed at China than they did at the West, at any single country in the West. Because China was the big unknown, the the people that will be smiling to your face while stabbing you in the back. And so the relations between Russia and China have always been very precocious.
And I don't think they're going to flat out normalize, do you?
No, I mean, I think both countries are very much like, you know, keep your enemies close, but your friends closer, or the other way around.
Mm-hmm.
Like, this is a, this is an opportunity for China to get cheap raw materials from Russia,
kind
like
of.
Way more than they normally would. And it's an opportunity for Russia to be able to sell products that Europe is no longer buying.
Yeah, I will say, though, that the Chinese are not necessarily getting as cheap of an oil as they are on the surface. So when you look at that price for, you know, the discounts that they're getting, that's great. But the problem they have is the supply chain and having to go all the way around the Horn of Africa and everything else.
Yeah.
You know, so until they get a pipeline really in place, which, you know, that's not easy to do over that terrain.
I mean, it takes time, but I think there's two of them in the works across Mongolia right now.
Yeah, again, though, that's not the most forgiving terrain, so it's going to take
a
while.
Desert.
And I mean, frozen desert at that.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it's a high desert. It's not a low desert.
Correct.
Yeah. But I don't know. I think his point about, like, China needing water from Russia was very interesting as well. But I will say that the lake that he's pointing out to, that ain't going to happen. I can tell you that, because that's... It's probably the most famous lake in Russia. It's a lake that, like, they make bottled water from there. They take it out of that lake and sell it everywhere, not just in the country, but all over the world. And it's got, at least by Russian standards, it's got pristine water.
Hmm.
So, no, I'm not sure.
I don't know that I would trust those standards.
Yeah, I know, right? So I don't know that I would either.
Hmm.
But it's certainly not something that is going to be traded in and put into Chinese control very easily. I think a lot of Russians would have protested that happening. So, but it's not to say that's like the only source of water in Russia. I mean, honestly, the deluges that happen all through Siberia when the snow melts, they turn what is normally like a little tiny stream into, you know, 8 foot, 9 foot deep, 80 feet wide rivers.
Mm.
So there is certainly plenty more water that can be piped from Siberia to China.
The problem you'd have with that is capturing it.
Yeah, yeah. Like, they'd have to make a fairly substantial dammed up reservoir somewhere either in Mongolia or on the border there.
Yeah, but do they have the geography for that, given how flat Mongolia is?
Yeah, I don't know. It may be on the steps from Mongolia down into China, maybe on Chinese territory. I don't know. Hard to say. But I'm sure there are people working on all this shit. Like, I would be surprised if these were not topics that are being discussed in the high-level meetings that are happening between China and Russia right now.
Hmm.
It's a good opportunity for both of them. It's like they could utilize each other a lot more successfully right now because of what's going on with U.S. and effectively being hostile both towards their interest in Ukraine and Taiwan.
Now, one of the things that video pointed out that I don't necessarily agree with on the water issue, you know, he's saying that China needs this water.
Mm-hmm.
Not if they're going to have the demographic collapse that others are predicting. So,
yeah, they could use less water. The other thing is, I mean, China has a huge coastline. They could also go desalination route as long as they have the energy to do it.
Yeah, desalination, though, poses its own problems. As I was just in a country that gets 99% of its water from desalination.
What's the main problem?
What you do with the brine?
You sell it.
What do you mean you sell it?
It's literally toxic waste. And salt.
No. It's not just salt that's in there. It's lots of other crap.
Well, I don't know. What else is in there?
Whatever's in the local seawater, you take out the fresh water, and then you're left with a brine of crap.
Yeah, but isn't that the same water you'd be drinking from anyway?
No, Gene, you don't drink seawater.
Well, okay, fair enough. I mean, it's salt water, so it's connected to the ocean. I don't think there's a whole lot of poison in the ocean unless it's man-made poison.
Okay.
If you increase the concentration of salt in water, as you would when you're doing desalination, you're going to kill all the organic organisms.
Yes.
So, you know, what, which are you talking about, like heavy metals, or what are you talking about? What poisons are you referring to?
Hold on. Washington Post. Wapo, wapo, wapo.
Mm-hmm. There's a paper record for you.
Yeah. So what's desalinated water? Is desalinated water safe to drink? Opponents of desalination have long said the technique hurts the environment, mm-hmm. cleans up the water, big challenge for fish, marine life, and the blackish, salty waste that's left over after the water is filtered. Disposal of it becomes a problem. It's energy intensive, which
it's literally
again,
salt.
To your point, it's salt and other trace minerals. But again, what do you do with it? So,
I mean, how much do you pay every month to buy sea salt in a can?
I understand.
Mm-hmm.
But you've got other stuff in there.
I think what they're referring to, which is what mm-hmm. you're misinterpreting here, is the poison of having a high salinity backwash for the fish and other critters that live close to the coastline where desalination plants exist.
Right.
Because they will turn the local environment inhospitable to biological life.
Yeah,
but it's not poison.
Well, first of all, hopefully they're not pumping it back into
some places
the ocean. You know, some of the Mideast states are actually using old oil wells and injecting it there.
I mean, they could also just dump it in deserts and, you know, just let the water
and
evaporate.
Kill the desert even further.
But there's nothing alive in the desert anyway. Mm. Just to get more humidity into the local microclimates and then leave the salt on the...
Okay. Well, anyway, desalination has its issues. You have to do something with it, and it does require a shit ton of energy, you know?
Yeah, it's definitely energy intensive. But that, and that's the thing is if, you know, but there's good news on the horizon for energy because fusion is here. What was that noise?
It was me trying not to laugh. Because
you snorting?
Yeah, fusion is not here.
It's kind of here.
In what way,
Gene?
It's not
commercially viable, but it's definitely here in terms of proof of concept.
In what way, Gene?
I sent you an article.
When did you send this article?
Today. Do you not check your freaking messages for me?
Not all of them, no. You send a lot of crap.
The electromagnetic... you. No, it's just if you keep scrolling up, you'll see the nuclear fusion is changing. New way to achieve nuclear fusion, helion.
Well, I have not seen any proof of concepts that...
Well, you should watch that video after this recording, and you'll see how you could do fusion now very easily.
Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm.
And how are they doing it? Enlighten me.
Well, they're creating plasma, which is then being accelerated at its counter component through use of magnetics very fast.
Yeah, so using magnetic constriction to generate plasma has mm-hmm. been how every Torbus reactor has ever worked.
Yeah, this
That's
is much
nothing
smaller.
New. Okay, the energy demands, though, so the way
the
fusion
energy demands are very high, but it's a net positive. Like they're demonstrating that they can produce energy. This is not
okay.
cold fusion. This is not some bullshit science. This is hot fusion. And
it's
something that is going to require a lot of energy and technological know-how to do. But I think we're on the cusp of it.
We've been on the cusp of fusion for a very long time. But the way fusion reactors and most designs work today is they use a lot of electrical energy to generate very mm-hmm. strong magnetic fields to yep. compress a material, usually deuterium, because heavy mm-hmm. water is nice that way.
Mm-hmm.
But they compress deuterium into the point where it becomes plasma. And yeah. starts to fuse because once you compress it to that point, you've got, you know, lots of free atoms, right? So plasma is a state of matter beyond gas where there essentially is no ties or entanglements.
Yeah, the electrons are all free floating.
Yes.
Yeah, so they're actually starting with hydrogen 3, but yeah, sorry.
Okay.
Helium 3, not hydrogen, of course.
Yeah, so HE3, you know, has been long theorized as a potential fuel for fusion because of similar reasons.
And there's a shit ton of it.
Not on Earth.
The whole backside of the moon's full of it.
There you go. I was about to say, not on Earth. You know, it was funny because during the 2008 presidential debate, or maybe 12, when Newt Gingrich ran and he proposed moon bases to mine helium-3.
Yep.
And everybody made fun of him. But it's like, no, actually, that's not totally a bad idea.
Yeah, absolutely.
Actually,
China's doing it.
You know, it strikes me that most people have really no clue about the Chinese space program. And, you know, it's shocking to me how few people realize, you know, China has their own space station. China is in orbit constantly. You know, they're doing lots of things up there that we as a country can't do. So.
Well, and then not only do they have their own space station, it is more roomy than the ISS.
Well,
it's much newer.
Exactly. So that's what I was about to say.
It's a lot more compact. Yeah, they've got their space station's made out of three pieces right now, and there's one additional fairly large one that they're contemplating launching. When they first built it, they built two identical HAB modules, assuming the first one would probably blow up on its way up there. So they built a backup right away. Well, the first one made it. Now, it used every bit of rocket fuel to get to its orbit. And remember, if you remember, there was a lot of anger happening about where the rocket's going to crash. That was the upper stage of that delivery vehicle. But they got it into the proper orbit. And so now they're talking about sending the backup up as well, which would give them essentially double their HAB volume in the station.
Well, I think Space Force has their next target. So question for you, what the hell's going on with the Russian modules on the International Space Station?
They're getting old.
Yeah. But yeah, the Soyuz escape capsule sprung a leak. They had to cut it loose. And then the other Russian module sprung a leak.
Yeah.
One report was tying it to potential micrometeoroids, but I don't know. It's interesting that the Russian segments were the ones that were failing.
Exactly. I think that there is something to be said for just shoddy workmanship as well. You know,
I'm shocked. Are you saying Russians do subpar work?
I'm saying that right now no one's really giving too much of a shit about the quality of work on anything other than military equipment. So I think that could be a part of it. I'm sure given that there were two of those instances very quickly, I think somebody's going to lose their job as a result of that probably. But Roscosmos they've got still a very good record, and I think they'll figure out what's going on and fix it.
Do you think it was sabotage?
I doubt it. I really don't think it would be. Okay. I mean, it's a very minor sabotage if it was sabotage.
I mean, it's just a black eye for Russia geopolitically.
Yeah, no one really cares even. I mean, it's just, I don't know, man. I think it's certainly a possibility that it could be sabotage, but I think it's just as likely just bad luck and shoddy workmanship.
Yeah. I will say that the Soyuz capsules have been absolutely the most reliable space transport ever designed.
Yep. And the most uncomfortable ever designed.
Why do you say that?
The interior volume per astronaut is like a foot. It's tiny, absolutely tiny. Like,
so that's where the FAA is getting their ideas on economy class.
Yeah, exactly. Not only would I not fit in there, I don't think you'd fit in there, frankly. I mean, they're just ridiculously cramped, where you're literally every cosmonaut is touching the other two guys.
Yeah, this is how Gene calls me fat.
Well, I mean, you're not fat, but that's my point. It's like, you don't even have to be fat. You'd still have problems sitting in that thing. They just a couple of years ago, literally just a few years ago, I think it was right when the SpaceX first human rated capsule went up, was the first time that they made a modification to allow people taller than 5'8" to be able to get in there.
Yeah, I wouldn't fit.
Imagine you're making a capsule literally to fit exactly a certain type size human and nobody bigger than that.
Well, I mean, that's pretty standard for a lot of cockpits, right?
Yeah, but then you look at the SpaceX one, and like you could put a 6'11" person in there.
Yeah, well, yeah, the SpaceX capsules are definitely different than what we've seen previously from both. It's like a Windows Soviet Bay Russia in there. Yeah, and it's running Windows. So what's your point?
Yeah, exactly.
You know, shit.
Yeah, it's all touch screens.
Yeah, but not flown from the capsule, though. That's the thing.
What do you mean?
It's pre-programmed.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I mean, they got to give people something to do. So that's why you have touchscreens, so you could play some games while you're being shuffled up there. It's autonomous. I mean, it's really the same mechanism as the space or the Tesla cars.
Yeah, and same mechanism as like Blue Horizon uses and so on.
You know, Blue Horizon doesn't have a capsule, but yeah.
Jeff Bezos? Yeah, they do.
No, they have a penis. They don't have a capsule.
Yeah.
And the penis is suborbital. So totally different.
Depends on your, yes. But, you know, it's hilarious to me that he designed that rocket that way.
Yes. He is the chief designer. Hey, nobody so, looking at it would say anything else.
Yeah, I remember what I was going to say. I remember I was driving back from Dallas. I was coming back down to College Station. And when the SpaceX manned crew was going up, and I had it streaming on my phone, and I had to pull over I had to pull over and watch it. And I won't lie. I teared up America to be returning to space in that
way.
They
did a great production with it.
Oh yeah.
The two dads.
Yep.
The space dads going up.
Well, you know,
reclaiming American superiority in space.
Yeah. And, you know, it's one of those things that just for an American company, regardless of the subsidies that Musk has gotten and things like that, but for an American company to be the pathway for NASA to get astronauts back into orbit is huge. Now, that said, I want to see, you know, NASA's answer come out. I actually want to see that damn thing built.
Which thing?
The new launch vehicle.
For what? Which one are you talking about? The SLS?
Yes.
Well, we saw the first flight of it already.
Unmanned. And, you know, but let's finish that program. Let's actually get it going and let's start sending people.
I mean, the crazy part of that program is that it basically relies on SpaceX to bring the people down to the moon and back up in a rocket that is way the fuck bigger than the capsule that's going to bring him from the moon back to the Earth. I mean, it's such a ridiculous plan if you look at it. I know why they're doing it. It's all based on contracts. But the idea that they're going to use SpaceX as the landing vehicle and use the Starship, which has a capacity of 100 people, They're going to use that to land on the moon and go back up, but then they're going to use a capsule built for 6 people to transfer from Earth to moon and moon back to Earth. It's asinine.
Well, we'll see. You know, depending on when this actually goes, I wouldn't be surprised for some contracts to go the wayside and them to actually build a lander.
But I'll tell you what I was super happy about, and I couldn't believe it when I first heard, but then I realized, holy shit, they actually managed to do it, is to see that the everyday astronaut is going to the moon.
What do you mean?
The guy, you know the guy, or maybe you don't know the guy, but there's a YouTube channel called Everyday Astronaut, which is a channel that really has been pumping out probably the best videos about SpaceX for 5-6 years. And it's a channel, I can't remember the guy's actual name, but he went by Everyday Astronaut. But he was a commercial photographer, and he bought a Russian spacesuit off of eBay years ago, like a big orange one, right? And then he did a series of photos for a photo book called Everyday Astronaut. And you can just Google it for you or anybody on the internet. Just Google Everyday Astronaut photos. And you'll see the pictures from that book. And they're very, very good. I mean, he was a very good photographer. And so you have things like, you know, just like a guy with a lunchbox walking into the NASA headquarters building or something, you know. They're just kind of neat little future, sort of like 1950s future rocket stuff photos instead of paintings. And so there's definitely composites there, right? So there's some green screen involved, but they look really nice.
Mm-hmm.
And so he started doing that. Then he was super excited about what's going on with SpaceX. And he started doing videos of the launches. And then he started doing explanation videos. I don't know what else to call them, like training. They're not really training, but like he did a video on the history of SpaceX. And he did a set of videos on like the different rocket engines and what are the pros and cons of different types. And is an AeroSpike the best engine? Why is nobody using it? Then he did a video that's the history of all Soviet rocket engines and the different models and how they differ and all that stuff. They've been doing like one a month, basically, of these space technology related videos.
He so also Gene, made. Have you bought your spacesuit yet?
No, I haven't. I'm definitely not going, but I think it's cool shit. But my point with this guy is like he ended up making a T-shirt that he designed that Elon wore, was like paparazzi photos of Elon wearing it came out. And then, of course, made this T-shirt super, you know, everybody wanted it. And then he ended up meeting Elon, and then they got to be friends. And so he's done a number of videos like with Elon for a whole day, walking around SpaceX and talking about different components and, you know, checking out different areas of their
production.
No, what the hell is there? I forget the name of the city they're building down off of South Padre there, SpaceX Town or whatever they're called. But just it's been an interesting thing to watch because I started watching him way before he had any access to SpaceX. Mm-hmm. And then the latest thing that just came out a few months ago was that he's been chosen as one of the civilians to fly to the moon.
Interesting. Is he actually going to land on the moon or no, just circle? No.
He's going to circle the moon. So he's going to do the same thing that the pre-Apollo 7 guys did.
You mean pre-Apollo 11?
Well, that's what the government would like you to think.
Okay. Uh-huh.
Just saying.
Uh-huh.
So,
and the next thing you'll tell me is there were more Apollo missions
Apollo 25. We went all the way through Apollo 25. Everybody knows that. It's a fact.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh. Yep. And where are you finding this information, Gene? It's
easily, freely available. You just got to look it up. It's free of mine, people. Don't believe all the CIA propaganda.
Hmm.
So
you've spent how much on the fake spaceships?
We're not going to go there.
Uh-huh.
That's not a number that needs to ever be mentioned by anybody to anybody.
Okay, but why haven't you bought a real spacesuit?
Well, there's no point in buying a spacesuit unless you're going to go. And the first thing to do is get a ticket. And those tickets are fucking expensive right now. Like they're in the $100 million range,
huh.
Which is just barely, but outside of my range.
Just barely. Come on.
Barely by a lot of zeros, but yes.
There you go. Yeah. Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
No, I mean, what's the point of owning a suit if it's never going to get used, you know?
Oh, I would totally have one to just throw in the corner of the office.
Yeah, as a prop, I suppose. But yeah. I don't have any prop things. I don't have like sci-fi guns or any. I mean, unless you count the IWI guns as sci-fi guns.
Kind of.
Kind of. They look like it, but they're fully functional.
Yeah.
I've never been into the whole buying like, you know, lightsabers and things.
Yeah. Nor have I. You've never seen my office, have you?
Mm-mm, nope.
So if I were to turn on a camera, what you'd see behind me is a very messy workbench and then a couch.
Just like sewing machine and, you know, stuff
no,
like
no,
that.
No, no, no. But you'd see some paintings and, you know, not what everyone would expect now. You would see a Pidey P8 and a Pidey P11 on one of the bookshelves blinking away. But, yeah.
Hmm. Where do you keep all your CIA clothes?
I don't have any CIA clothes, Gene, that's right. And I don't know what those would look like.
Okay. Sure.
I will say that I definitely stood out in all the countries that I went to when I wasn't at work because I wore what I wear when I'm in the U.S. So I was in jeans and a polo running around,
that's
you know.
The CIA usually wears. And so you do have your CIA clothes.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Yeah. But, you know, I got to tell you, it was definitely interesting and fun in Dubai. because I spent the majority of time in the Middle East, I spent in Dubai. Mm-hmm. And I could have gone to, you know, the mall there and done whatever shopping, you know, in the expensive part of town.
Yeah.
But instead, mm-hmm. I went to basically an open air market in the poor side of town. Mm. And holy crap, what a difference. You know, because where I was staying was in downtown Dubai. I mean, I could see the tallest building in the world mm-hmm. from my hotel, you know, right there. Not
yep.
like far away. But it was interesting because, you know, in the worker area, you know, people were hanging their laundry out on their balconies, things like that. Mm-hmm. A haircut was $5, which ends up being like $1.50, $1.30.
Yeah, I think it's a little over $3 a dollar.
3.6, 3.7.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. So anyway, it was just very interesting. Lots of counterfeit stuff, lots of things like that floating around. But yeah.
Get your fake Rolex right there.
I didn't buy anything, but it was interesting to walk around and see. But, you know, one of the things that struck me about the UAE that really just absolutely I did not understand till I went there is in Dubai, 91% of the population is expats.
Right.
So 91% of the population has immigrated.
I wouldn't say expat, they're foreigners.
Okay. Well, yes, that is a key thing because the Emirati are the only ones who are citizens.
Right.
And there is no immigration. There is no naturalization. There is no way to get a UAE passport without an Emirati parent. Or
you can marry
parented. In. You could marry in, yes. But that's very, very controlled.
I've looked at this.
Yes. The other thing that's interesting is that if you invest like $1.5 million, you can get the mm-hmm. quote-unquote golden visa.
Right.
Which gives you the right to stay in the UAE for up to 10 years. Now, that can be revoked at any given time, things like that. And yeah.
Yeah. Well, I fully support that model. I think that people that own the country should ensure that they're in charge of who gets in and not just let every Tom, Dick, and Harry come in with no reason.
Yeah. But I mean, a path to citizenship would be nice and some guarantee of rights,
it's not
you know.
Necessary. I don't think it's necessary.
Well, I mean, I would never live in the UAE because of things like that.
Now, well, you want to become a UAE citizen?
No.
That
given their system
you
of
from
government.
Traveling to Israel ever.
Yes, this is true.
Yeah.
Which, by the way, one of the business partners that's headquartered in Tel Aviv
mm-hmm.
asked me, oh, so, you know, hey, since you're going to be over here, why don't you stop in? And, you know,
yeah,
I was like, yeah, not on this trip, guys.
Uh-huh.
I'll need another passport for this.
Exactly. Exactly. That's not going to happen on this trip with hitting all these Arab countries.
You know, with some of the Abraham Accords and things like that, it's gotten better. But, and, you know, Israel will put a sheet in your passport and stamp that.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, again,
yep.
I wasn't going to go to Israel before the Middle Eastern trip. I'll just say it that way.
Yeah. Exactly.
So,
exactly. But it sounds like it was a pretty good time all said and done.
Oh, yeah. One last thing on the flight home.
What airline did you fly back?
Emirates.
Emirates. Okay. And then you flew out which one on the way out?
What do you mean?
Or two there? Singapore Air.
Yeah. Singapore Air was the one on the way out. But anyway, it was funny. We definitely jogged to miss Ukraine on the flight path. But then it was just up and over. So I flew over both Tehran and Moscow.
Yeah, I was going to ask about that. So your trip through Iran and through Russia went without incident, huh?
We lost Wi-Fi once we got over Russia and it never really came back. So that was kind of interesting.
Oh, it never came back. That's interesting.
Yeah, it was spotty.
Yeah, because I mean, I would certainly think that there's a high likelihood you're not going to have Wi-Fi when you're flying over Russia. But it should have come back afterwards, I would think.
I mean, it was, you know, geostationary satellites providing the Wi-Fi, but there was something wrong with the access point on the plane.
Yeah.
That was the issue. And I will say that the Emirates A380 is a neat plane. I'm glad I flew on it, but I got to tell you, I prefer Singapore. Everybody puts Emirates business class on this pedestal,
right?
And it didn't live up for me. The food on Singapore was way better. Yeah. The seats were different. So on the Singapore Airlines, I had a seat that I could recline quite a bit, but to lay flat, you had to get up and lay it flat, which that was a bit of a pain and something to get used to. The Emirates seat, you could just push the button and lay flat, mm-hmm. but the Emirates seat was narrower than the Singapore seat. So, and you know, I'm not a big guy, but I've got pretty broad shoulders, and it was a little narrow for me. Interesting point. Singapore on their HBO Max had, you know, House of Dragons and whatever, uncensored, right? Mm-hmm. Emirates under their HBO Max had a very small selection of approved content.
Interesting. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's when you're at a point in air travel where you're critiquing Emirates Airlines business class, you're in a small group of people, my friend.
I don't want to sound elitist. It was great to fly it. I'm very glad I flew
that.
No, how so?
Oh, yes. Oh, Emirates, not all it's cracked up to be, people. Don't bother with it.
I'm not saying that at all. No, I mean,
it sounded like you were saying that.
Let's put it this way. If I'm in Dubai again, I will fly Emirates again home because it's a straight flight.
You're probably going to travel again before too long. What airline are you going to fly?
What do you mean?
Well, when you're flying on your next trip, what airline are you going to buy tickets on?
You know, I'll try and stay with the Star Alliance just because of United and everything else.
Singapore.
Probably are United.
No, you're not flying fucking United.
Okay.
Not after
If I'm going to South Africa, then yeah, I might be flying Polaris. So, because, you know, flights. I will say this. The problem with Emirates, though, is, you know, big expensive flight and you basically get nothing for them because they don't partner with anyone.
Qatar, from my standpoint,
Qatar, I flew Qatari Airways as well. Mm-hmm. And Qatar Airways is part of Oneworld. So that tied into my American stuff. And, you know, living and working in DFW, I had, you know, had to fly American. So I still have gold status or
I'm both
more than gold status.
Yeah.
And on American. Yeah.
Nice. Well, that's fun for you.
Yes.
What else is going on?
I don't know. We're recording at a different point in time because wife and kids and everybody are off doing spring break stuff.
So Biden's doing a deal with Australia to get them nuclear submarines, apparently, because that, I guess, is going to help with China.
Actually, that started under Trump. So originally the Australians were going to purchase French diesels and Trump threw out that, oh, well, we'll give you nukes. And there you go.
Yep.
Now, nuke propulsion, not armament.
Sure, but how do you know?
I mean,
if you have nuclear sensors that'll pick up nuclear radioactive material within a certain area, you're not going to be able to tell whether they're nukes or whether they're nuclear-powered submarine.
Well, it definitely would be a pretty good backstop against China.
It's definitely going to be taken as an affront by China. There's no two ways.
As it should be, 100%.
Yeah, because then shifting from the U.S. to Australia is a good move for the U.S. I don't think it's a particularly smart move for Australia.
Well, first of all, China is hostile to Australia geopolitically to begin with.
No, I wouldn't say that. They've done a huge amount of investment in Australia.
Yes, because they need the Australian coal.
So people in Australia are hostile towards China. I would say that, but I don't think China is hostile. I mean, if they were hostile to Australia, then they would be not doing any trade with them. They would be boycotting them.
Well, they're not because they have to have the Australian coal. China is very, very dependent upon imports, especially for their electric grid. You know, they burn a lot of coal and that almost all of it comes from Australia. I think Australia supplies like over 60% of China's coal.
And Australia is basically just made of coal.
Coal and fissible material and lots of things, yes.
Yeah. Yeah. Which is probably not for the next 20 years, but I think at some point there was going to be a big fight for Australia.
Well, I mean, just the uranium deposits alone would kind of indicate that. Now, you know, the problem you have with Australia is you have such a large territory held by so few people.
Yes, absolutely. You know, like, it would almost be as easy for China to take over Australia as Taiwan.
In all honesty, it would be probably somewhat easier in some ways. Mm-hmm. Taiwan has been building up for a fight with China since, you know, the 1940s. The Australians have not. Also, the Australian military, you know, they don't have the investment that
they wear shorts.
Taiwan has.
Yeah, and they still wear shorts.
Okay.
Which is funny. It's just funny seeing an army wearing shorts. That's all.
Why? Why is that funny to you?
It just looks funny. I don't know. It just kind of harkens back to British rule in India.
Yeah.
Where the official British uniform was shorts.
Well, that's another thing tie into the Middle East, because I had to use the British plug, you know, over there, because they were all British protectorates back in the day. So, yeah.
Protectorate, that's a good way of putting it.
That is the official designation that they had, yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, yes, they were
occupied by the British.
Yeah. Yes, definitely occupied.
You know, I think it's going to be a bit of a race here between, like, how quickly we can get, and by we meaning anybody on Earth, can get reliable fusion energy going. Because that's going to be the downfall of the Middle East and really any countries that are big exporters of oil and coal. Well,
so talking to several oil companies in the Middle East, part of why I was over there, man, the ESG is strong with them.
Really?
Yes.
They like all the gay stuff?
They are definitely focused on sustainability and renewability. I mean, you know how big of a deal business cards are in the Middle East.
Oh, yeah.
So I had one of the executives, this is how bought in he was. He handed me his card, two-handed, and, you know, set it down, and he said, please take a picture for sustainability, instead of actually giving me his card, which I found annoying.
Oh, my God. That's annoying as hell. That's called a souvenir.
Yes. Well, I've got several of them, so from different people. Mm-hmm. But yeah, they are definitely trying to move away. You know, the international shipping organizations are pushing fuel reduction strategies that are absolutely insane, if you ask me. I mean, they're talking about being carbon free by 2050.
Yeah, which is
insane. Not possible. Now, part of the way they're doing that is by saying, you know, if you use biodiesel, that's carbon neutral. If you use fuel synthesized from carbon capture, that's carbon neutral. Things like that. And they're even bringing back the possibilities of, you know, trading ships being nuke powered, i.e. the NS Savannah.
Yeah, that's wild that they're seriously contemplating that stuff.
Well, I mean, the Savannah should have caught on as a class of ship. You know, it absolutely... That should have been a revolution in the transport of goods. I mean, but, you know, politics around fissible material being what it is.
I don't mean that part. I mean, just the idea that they're really giving a shit about all this hydrocarbon stuff.
Hmm. Well, I think they're at least playing lip service to it, you know, but I mean, oil is very cheap over there. Gas was like $1.05 a gallon after doing the conversions.
$1.05?
Yep.
Yeah, that's pretty cheap.
Yeah.
It's actually cheaper than Russia is right now.
Yeah. What do you think of Netanyahu's move in the Golan Heights?
So I have to say, I have not been following this. So I'm...
Ooh.
I've maybe seen one story on it, so...
Yeah, so there have been several, but essentially what he has done while no one was watching was replaced the military government in... You know, you could say the West Bank or the Palestinian territories, whatever you want to call it, the disputed area. And he's replaced it with a civilian government, basically saying, this is no longer disputed. This is ours.
Yeah. Well, I think they should have done that a long time ago, frankly. And that would be my take on it. But, you know, I believe in the doctrine of conquest. We've talked about this before. So I think when you win a war and you occupy land afterwards, then... Unless there's a really good reason not to, it should be a part of the country.
Mm. I don't sterilize all the men, take over the women.
I don't like the... No, you just export them. But I don't like the idea of doing this administrative stuff the way the U.S. did in Germany. You know, it's administrative zones are... I think they have a much higher cost, and they breed resentment.
Now, what do you think of the U.S. occupation of Japan and how that handled?
Yeah, same thing.
Yeah, but got a very close ally, and it wasn't a country we could have ever permanently occupied.
I don't understand why we couldn't have a 51st through 7th state in Japan right now. In the last 60 years, It would have been, everybody would be speaking English.
So I don't know that the Japanese would have capitulated to that very easily.
I don't
think
they had a choice because we made nukes.
Yes, well, secondly, it sure would change the China position today, wouldn't it?
Yes, it would. Having United States off the coast of China, and Russia, incidentally, literally within 100 miles, would make the U.S. position very different than it is right now.
Yeah, if we made it out of the Cold War, but yes.
Well, I don't see why we wouldn't have. I mean, we got...
Well, that would have been massively more provocative towards both the USSR and
if you were ever
going
to do it, that was the time to do it.
Yeah, absolutely. And same thing with Taiwan, you know, recognizing Taiwan as a free and independent state would have been...
The Philippines absolutely should have become part of the United States. There's no two ways about that.
I don't know that the Philippines would agree with that.
Again, back in the war, it would have been the perfect time to do it. I'm not saying doing it right now.
Mm-hmm.
No? So you can do it in only two instances. Can you take land like that?
Mm-hmm.
One is if you win as an occupier, or two is if you win as a liberator. That's the only two times that you get to take land. Anything else results in very high cost.
Yeah, I mean, we've definitely seen some territories annexed in the past where that's not necessarily the truth, but okay. Yeah. I mean, look at the Hawaiian Islands.
I'll tell you this. If
we weren't a conqueror or a liberator in the Hawaiian Islands.
Oh, we stole those. Those were completely legally stolen.
Right, but they're ours now.
Well,
and we weren't seen as liberators and we weren't seen as conquerors.
Yeah. But I mean, there was no treaty. So they were literally just like, okay, this is now our land. The Hawaiian Islands effectively became part of the United States the same way that the state of New York became part of the United States. We just declared it as such.
Well, isn't that what you do?
Well, yeah, I mean, but more recently there were actual treaties, which is how, like, Alaska, for example, was purchased. It was a hell of a good deal, too.
I thought your narrative was that it wasn't actually purchased.
Well, the papers were never signed, so you could make an argument that it was never purchased, but...
Was the check cashed?
Yeah,
was payment received?
I'm pretty sure the payment was received, yeah.
Okay.
That was the main thing they were looking for, was the payment.
Yeah.
Yeah, which incidentally, the reason that Alaska was sold because of the Russo-Japanese War. Mm. They needed money.
Financing, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Well, and, you know, it wasn't exactly much of a colony at the time. You know, there weren't a lot of people living there. There still aren't.
10 people there.
Yeah, exactly.
I know.
The population's doubled. That's about it.
Honestly, I suspect the number of Orthodox churches in Alaska has probably remained static for ever since it was part of Russia.
Yeah, so two.
I don't think it's changed at all.
You know, Alaska is intriguing, but it's someplace I've never been and really have no desire to go to.
I wouldn't mind going there for some fishing, and it's beautiful country. I mean, I would not mind going there with just a camera and no real, you know, reason to besides that.
Yeah, sure, but I'm talking about actually living there.
That has bears. Like streamed constantly from Alaska, and they're super awesome.
Yeah, what I'm referring to is like actually living there, you know.
Oh, no,
and
no,
you know, you have the whole male to female ratio being all screwed up.
Not a good deal for males up there. No. But the average pay is about double, so there is an upside to living there. And in fact, I've met a handful of folks that have gone to Alaska for 3 to 4 years in their 20s, and then come down to live, you know, in the lower 48 with a $500,000 nest.
Hmm.
Now that definitely
sets
up your life
right.
Pretty good. What's that?
This has to be wrong. The ratio, okay, that makes more sense. So this first, I blame Bing. You have me using Edge for the show because of, you know, whatever. Alaska has the highest male to female ratio with 10 men for every 100 women. That's bullshit. And then when we actually get down into the actual statistics, it's 109 men for every 100 women.
Oh, that's actually 10% closer than difference. I expected. I thought it would be like, you know, 30 or 60 to 100 kind of ratio.
Yeah.
Hmm. That's actually not as bad as I... It probably used to be worse back like 50, 60 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
More people have actually gone there. But I think Alaska is, it's a kind of place that you go in order to accomplish something, not the kind of place you go to just like live the rest of your life.
Indeed.
Cause that's gotta be warmer.
I don't. Yes. Yeah.
I could not live in the, I mean, I grew up in the frozen north, so I kind of know a little bit about it, but I would never choose to live in a place where the Celsius temperature and the Fahrenheit temperature cross over. Like, that's too fucking cold. And I've experienced that multiple times in my life.
Oh, that's funny. What temperature is that, by the way?
It's 40 degrees below zero.
Yeah, 40 negative.
40 below, yeah. Okay. Where it doesn't matter which scale it's on, it's still 40 below.
Yeah, no thank you. Yeah.
Water freezes so fucking fast. You breathe out your breath from your lungs and you could see little ice crystals falling down to the ground.
Yeah, I will say that having lived in North Central Idaho, part of me definitely misses it, but it never got that cold. I think the coldest it got up there was 15 below while we lived there, which is plenty cold. But, you know, and it's not somewhere where I'd necessarily ever buy a house or live, but definitely go and visit and go skiing and do things like that. You know?
Honestly, there's not a whole lot of difference between 15 below and 40 below. It's once you get to about 20 below, anything colder than that is not, like, you can't really tell without looking at a thermometer. It's not too fucking cold. It's all in the range of too fucking cold. So
yeah, you know. I think anything below zero Fahrenheit is too fucking cold, personally.
At this point in my life, anything below 32 Fahrenheit is too fucking cold. I don't want, like, you know, if I could just move somewhere without it affecting anything else in my life, like internet connectivity or whatever, I would totally be living in Central America.
Well, I mean,
it's like the concept of ice coming down from the clouds doesn't exist.
Right. But the problem is there's several problems with that. I mean, Belize, a lot of people expat to Belize because they use the U.S. dollar. They're primarily an English speaking country with decent property protection laws. But yeah, I don't know. Central America is too politically up in the air for me.
I think I need to go there. Check it out. I mean, I was in Costa Rica for a while, and Costa Rica was nice, but I also had a very unique experience in Costa Rica. So,
do tell.
Well, I'll write a book about it at some point. But I've told you some of this stuff. Like, I lived next door to the Russian embassy down there.
And you call me a spook. Embassy.
You are a spook. So I lived in the Nicaraguan embassy down there, and one of our games was to kick footballs over the fence to the Russian embassy and then have them kick it back. I mean, we just played football across the fence basically. But when I was there, it was very nice. But that's the thing. It's like, you know, I had a driver, I had two bodyguards with dogs and machine guns, fully automatic machine guns. It was a lot more of an experience that you would see in a movie about Colombia than like typical American tourism. So I thought it was great. I almost died a couple times, but that aside, it was great.
What year was this?
This was in the late 90s.
Okay. Have you ever heard the song "Send Lawyers, Guns, and Money"?
Mm-mm.
Oh, I'll send you a link, but the lyrics are "Send lawyers, guns, and money. Shit has hit the fan."
Yeah. Well, the one thing I will say is that it was fairly surreal in a lot of ways. And unfortunately, a few of the people that I hung out there with they've lost their freedom. It's the best way of putting it. There's three people in American prison and two in Russian prison.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Well,
interesting. So this is perfect for you, the way these lyrics read. "I went home with the waitress the way I always do. How was I to know she was with the Russians too? Gambling in Havana, I took a little risk. Send lawyers, guns, and money. Dad, get me out of this." It goes on.
That's pretty good.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so there are definitely places in Central America where you can go have fun. I mean, let's put it this way. You can bring $1.5 million and put it in the bank in the Emirates, or you can bring $1.5 million and have fun with it in Central America and live like a king.
Yeah.
Your probably odds of disappearing are equal in both countries.
Well, especially, you know, it was funny because I was sitting around the table at a country club in the Dubai Hills, which is their equivalent to, you know, Beverly Hills. And we were talking about, you know, how, you know, what we kind of felt about the surveillance state and everything else. And it was funny because there was one kind of uncomfortable moment where one of my coworkers said, yeah, let's change the subject before we lose our hands.
Nice.
And, you know, it was a little bit of gallows humor, but there was definitely some truth to that, you know?
Yeah, well, you're definitely better knowing that there's some truth to it than thinking it's just a joke.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. All right, man. Anything else?
Well, I'm trying to think if there's anything else that we...
Have you ever been to Honduras?
On foot.
What do you mean by on foot?
I don't know what the airport's like. Don't ask me about that.
Yeah. So one of the other lines in that song is, and I'm hiding in Honduras. I'm a desperate man.
Yeah, that sounds more like the John McVie, though.
Yeah. Dead or alive? What do you think?
Oh, he's dead.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure. Yeah, I'm pretty sad about it. But yeah, I think he had a crazy life. He did so much awesome stuff, but he still ended up getting killed too. I mean, he ended up dying too early.
Oh, he was killed. There's no doubt. If he's dead. Now, I will say that in 2016, when he was running for president, before, you know, really the Trump bandwagon got started, I definitely have one of his 16 shirts, which was a cool shirt.
Nice.
So, yeah.
Yeah. And I
was always a fan of McAfee. If he would have gotten the Libertarian nomination in 2016, I might have voted for him over Trump.
He is a crazy fucker, but I've always liked his kind of crazy.
Mm-hmm.
And I did get to have drinks with him about a year before he died. So that was, I'm glad that happened, because otherwise I would have felt like I missed out.
Well, congratulations. I've never met the man. So.
Oh, really? No.
When would I have met
McAfee? I bought him a White Russian. We both had White Russians.
I have met Kevin Mitnick.
Hmm.
I have.
I've been at events that he's spoken at, but I've never met him.
Yeah, I've met Kevin Mitnick. I've met H.D. Moore. You know, there's some pretty good names on the list that I've, you know, had some pretty good dealings with.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah.
Yeah, it's wild. Yeah, I don't know that there is anything more to cover. I think we've talked about most of the topics that I texted you about. Did you watch any of that Tim Pool episode?
Which one?
It was the one with
the one from last night? Yes.
The one with the guy that has the
ranch, yeah.
Yeah.
Which apparently Tim has invested in.
Yeah, of course he has. Yeah.
Yeah, I think Tim's getting a little freaked out
by the economic situation. I think there's a few things happening. I think first of all, I think Tim's income dropped.
Yeah, it sounds like
so great until he decided to be a prick. And then combine that with the greater uncertainty in the financial markets, the bank going down, yada, yada, yada. I think Tim, he's repeated the phrase, oh, you know me, I'd just be living in the van down by the river so many times now. Mm-hmm. It's almost like he wants to make sure nobody's surprised if this was to actually happen. Talked about it. I said I'd do it. I'm doing it.
Yeah, I think there's an ego protection there for sure. But yeah.
Yeah, for a guy that drives a $120,000 Tesla, yeah. Let's have you live in a van by the river. Okay.
I mean, it'll be a really nice van.
It'll be a fucking, yeah, it'll be an Airstream.
Yeah.
Or something.
Yeah, well, I tell you, I definitely could have gone the hermit lifestyle, you know, but I chose a wife and kids instead. But there's definitely part of me that could build a little shack down by the river, hunt, fish, go do odd jobs here and there, and be great.
Yeah. Well, when the EMPs go off, we'll have plenty of practice for that.
Yeah.
Speaking of EMPs, are you doing any kind of off-premises data backups?
Professionally or
personally?
What do you mean?
Personally.
Some, like, why?
Would your computers all just lose all their data?
Well,
or are you backing up anywhere else?
I mean, some of that is personal, but, you know, I do have what I would consider...
Out of Texas is what I mean. Are you backing up out of Texas?
Yes.
Okay, good.
And what I would say is I also have, you know, you can get a Toughbook pretty cheap. You can put it in a metal box and shield it pretty cheap. Mm-hmm. And you can put a lot of interesting information on said Toughbook.
Sure, yeah. But, I mean, so you're saying keeping one locally, not somewhere else.
As part of your bug out kit, yeah.
Yeah. I used to have a number of locations throughout the United States with storage.
Mm-hmm.
And after a while, I think actually it was after I got divorced, I was like, you know what? There's a lot of money I'm spending for no good reason. And so I consolidated everything back down. But I used to have basically a 2-month supply of everything, including ammo and guns, spread around the country in a number of different locations.
That would be expensive.
It gets to be after a while. Yeah.
Yes, but I mean, where are you storing these?
Yeah, well, I mean, they were all storage facilities. They're basically shipping containers.
Mm. Yeah, that would get expensive. And you'd have the risk of, you know, anyway. Yeah, data is kept lots of different places for me. You know, when I was really, really worried about it, I used to use several different companies, including like Spider Oak back in the day. You know, a bit of data that I care about is unfortunately in Google, but, you know, that's neither here nor there. Any critical data that I have to keep safe, number one, my computer, my NAS, and then, you know, offsite backup. So,
yeah. Yeah. And I think the offsite backup is pretty important. I need to find a good Brazilian ISP. I don't have one down there right now.
So what do you mean by any ISP? Suggestions,
somebody that will give me a virtual server down there.
Well, that's easy.
A good one.
Like, I think 1&1 has some South American.
I've got 1&1, but I don't have them there.
Well, 1&1 has some South American data centers, I do believe.
Okay.
And they're a rock solid hosting company. They've been around for forever.
Yeah, I've probably paid them about $50,000 at this point.
Oh God, I don't even want to think about how much I've paid 1&1 and. My wife, we've been tracking budgets, and, you know, in the spring is generally right now is when all my domains renew, and she's looking at it going, what are all of these and why do you have them?
Yeah.
Don't worry about it, honey.
I'll tell you offline. I actually just started using a different domain company. I basically, how they all get you is they give you the super cheap price in your first year and then you're fucked every year after that. So I started looking like, who has the cheapest renewal rates? Because that's who I'm going to move to.
Yeah.
That first year doesn't matter.
So I use Hutter just because they've been a great domain provider for a long time. And they're not super expensive and they have things that I like. So, yeah.
I've always used name.com because they were one of the first companies to do all the international domains.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I couldn't do a lot of them on 1&1. I couldn't do them on Amazon. I couldn't do them on a lot of American ISPs, but name.com always had, you know, I got back my Libyan domain. I was so happy about that.
What Libyan domain did you have?
I had a Libyan domain that ended up disappearing. I guess there were some issues with Libya that we had or something. I don't know.
Yeah, and we killed Gaddafi.
Yeah, something like that. And I finally got it back, so I'm very happy about that.
I mean, don't you remember Hillary Clinton's statement, we came,
I died. I know, it's annoying when you know, politicians fuck up your personal business. But I'm just
sure
happy
that
I got
intention.
It back. Well, what else would...
Stopping the gold back dinar?
Yeah, well, it could have been that. I mean, that's what they were charging for the domains with. But dude, don't even get me started on that whole fiasco. Yeah, so I guess bottom line is keep at least a chunk of your money in your mattress, folks. Not all of it, but certainly some of it at this point is not a bad idea.
Yeah, I mean, I won't go that far, but, you know, watch your bank accounts, have some cash, diversify. Mm-hmm. And realistically, depending on what happens, cash may or may not be, you know, valuable.
The thing
Remember,
is, I think
ammo always is.
Ammo is definitely valuable. People will take ammo. So, and ammo pricing is still going down as far as I can see.
Yeah, there were, shit, I meant to send this to you. There was a gun deal at Bud's Gun Shop on, I forget which 9mm it was, but it was one that I thought you'd be interested in, and they were giving away a gun, and they were, the Smith & Wesson competitor 9mm. If you buy it, then you can get 200 rounds of ammo included for just $1.
I really don't need any more fucking handguns. And there's one I'm looking at, but I really don't need any more.
Which
the only one
that?
The one I don't have right now is anything in 5.7. So
it's an expensive cartridge.
It is an expensive cartridge, but there's, I think, four manufacturers of those guns now. Palmetto being the cheapest, and Ruger makes one. I think Smith just has one that came out, and then of course the original 5.7 from FN, Fabrique Nationale.
Well,
so but I always
I'd
wanted
rather have
to
a
10
millimeter.
Gun. Eh, just get a 45. It's better.
Oh boy, let's not start the cartridge debates.
Well, I mean, look, I got more 40 caliber rounds than any other rounds right now. And it's a good round, but I still prefer 45. And 10
well,
millimeters.
There's a big difference between 45 and 40 and 10 millimeter.
Yeah, 10 is right between those two. It's a smaller round than the 45. Is just a hair bigger than the 40, but it's got more powder than the 40. But I still prefer the 45 over both those.
Yeah, so the 10 millimeter is to the 40 cal as the 9 millimeter is to the 380.
I don't think it's that much difference.
Okay.
I mean, it's definitely more powder, but talk about an expensive round, dude, because nobody fucking uses them.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you're the one talking about expensive rounds, so I'm just, you know.
Yeah, no, I know. But the 5.7 is an interesting round, although we can't buy the good 5.7 rounds.
And why is that?
Steel core.
Okay.
So it's NFA.
Right, I understand. Well, not necessarily.
That whole cartridge... back when it was first developed and the P90 came out, one of the requirements of that cartridge was penetration of level 3 armor.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, that's achieved with the steel core rounds. And you can carry a lot more of those rounds than other rounds with similar ballistics. So that was an awesome gun. I love the P90 ever since it came out.
Yeah, I would love to have one, but the problem is, you know, I don't want the civilian version.
Exactly.
Yeah.
The benefit
with
of the P90...
stupid barrel sticking out.
Yeah, the civilian version has a barrel, the PS90, but it's beyond that. Like, the whole advantage of that gun is that it's a zero recoil, fully automatic gun. Mm-hmm. And if it's shot in semi-auto mode, then... you lose, then it really is no better than the pistol that I'm looking to get.
Well, yeah. And, you know, the P90, one of the cool things about it was actually meant to be a offensive sidearm. You know, it was issued as the first offensive sidearm. And part of that was the 50 round clip and everything else. You know, it's
even a
substantial
magazine.
Gun.
Yeah.
Yes, magazine. My God.
Yeah.
I know this ain't no M1 Garand clips. Getting loaded with a clip, but
fucking A. Yeah, I love it when people that are supposed to be like firearms experts start talking about clips that you snap
into
your gun.
I know the difference.
You know the difference. That's why I'm making fun of you. You do know the difference. So the bottom line is, if I could get, which I can't in this country, an actual P90, then I would love that, but if I can't get the P90, I'd rather have the pistol. That's kind of my whole thing on it. But I don't think I need any more 9mm. I sure as hell don't need any other guns of any caliber at this point. My whole spending spree that I went on at the end of last year, or in a large part thanks to you, asshole.
How did any of that?
Because you had conversations with me about different cartridges, and that got me to buy the guns. So I blame you fully. But at this point, I'm set. So I've got, obviously, the regular 5.56. I've got the 300 Blackout. I've got the 6.5 Grendel. I've got the what is the other one? The 6.5, not Grendel, the other one. What the hell is the other one? I'm trying to remember.
Creedmoor?
Yeah, got one of them. And then what else did I get? There's something else I got that's in that similar size. Oh, and then I got a couple of 7.62x39s.
Yeah. So, and I'm, you know, all I almost have purchased a Palmetto State AK a couple of times. It's tempting just because of the price point, but I haven't.
You know what they've got on sale right now?
What's that?
That I'm sort of tempted to buy, although I totally don't need it. Is they have a, actually let me pull up the page real quick here. But it's a shotgun with a based on the AK.
Yeah, I've seen them.
But the interesting thing about them, and I always thought they were kind of neat until I got my IWI shotgun, which is even cooler. But the thing that's neat about it is you can reload it super fast because it uses magazines, which, you know, most shotguns, you load them one cartridge at a time. Where this thing, you could just swap magazines and load them really fast.
Yeah. And, you know, that's fine. I just, you know, so I have a home protection shotgun that's, you know, 18-inch barrel, but everything else is for hunting. So, you know, those types of semi-automatic shotguns are just not useful to me.
Well, what do you mean not useful to you?
I mean, if I was going to spend money on a semi-automatic shotgun, it would be for hunting purposes with a very long barrel.
Oh,
and,
I see.
It would probably be like a Benelli.
Yeah. Oh, by the way, did I send you that video of a guy with a Benelli hand tossing 8 clay pigeons up in the air and shooting every single one of them?
No.
That was pretty impressive. I'll see if I can find who I sent it to and then send you a copy as well. But, you know, he's just holding on to them in his left hand and he chucks them up and then boom, 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 before any of them hit the ground.
Yeah, I think Mechalik, some of his shots are pretty damn impressive.
You know, his daughter's really good too. Have you seen her videos?
I have, yeah.
She looks like a female version of him though. It's hilarious.
That's very unfortunate.
I know it is. That's in the context I meant it in. It's unfortunate that she looks a little too much like him. But yeah, it's
well. And you were so obsessed with what's her name on the chocolate commercial.
No, I wasn't obsessed. I was just like, it surprised me how tall she is.
Yeah, but I mean, well, that or Jeremy Boring's short.
Well, yeah, Jeremy. I mean, we knew Jeremy was short, but she's really tall.
Yeah.
She was in another video recently, and the Brett Cooper is who we're talking about, but she was in another video I watched recently. I watched
the female Ben Shapiro, by the way.
Who's a foot taller than Ben. Literally a foot taller. Yes. Absolutely.
What do you think Ben Shapiro is? Like 4'8"? I mean, come on.
No, he's like 5'7".
Well, she's not 6'7".
Yeah, well, she is with heels. No, I'm telling you, she's a 6-footer, man. Like without any heels. And then with heels, she's definitely over 6. But she was on with Michael. What's the Michael guy's last name?
Michael
on there?
Malice.
No. The part of the Ben crowd. Michael
Knowles.
Knowles. Right. So they did a show with Knowles where they're going to different Starbucks.
Mm-hmm.
And Knowles is an inch shorter than her. And Knowles is not a short guy.
Wouldn't know. Never met him.
Well, fair enough. But he's he's the same height as Ted Cruz. How tall is Ted Cruz?
I always thought he was
6 foot.
No.
I don't know. But either way, I think she's the tallest person in their studio.
Yeah, Ted Cruz is 5'8". He's shorter than me.
Oh, 5'8". So Knowles is like 5'8", 5'9", and she was taller than Knowles. So she is 6 feet.
Yeah.
For sure. Well, it makes sense. I mean, you know, she was an actress and a model chick. So they like them tall.
All right, man. Well, right. I think we've beat the dead horse.
Okay, if you say so. I mean, we talked a lot about your travels, so I figured I want to get all the other stuff in as well.
Well, we did talk about other stuff, too. Thank you. Mm-hmm. And, you know, 20 minutes ago, I asked if there was anything else, and you said no, so.
Well, there isn't.
Okay.
It's a Takarev. That's what it is. It's a Takarev bullpup 12-gauge semi-automatic shotgun. and it's white.
So you're starting to accessorize your guns with your tracksuits.
Okay. I kind of would like one of these that totally matches my tracksuit. Holy shit! I'm hitting the buy button right now.
You are not, Gene.
I am. I wish you could see my screen. I'm so buying this. Oh, this totally goes with the tracksuit, man. You would not believe how well this fits.
That's
a Tucker app.
Mm-hmm.
Ordered. There we go.
Tracksuit shotgun. Huh? How much was it?
$300.
Oh, that's not bad.
No, it's not bad at all.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not, free, but given that I don't need any guns right now, this is about as much as I'm willing to spend.
So I actually am. I'm on Palmetto State's website and looking at this.
Did you find it?
Yes, I did. It is totally a tracksuit gun.
Tracksuit gun.
Yeah.
I don't know if I'm allowed to show. I guess I am allowed to show that on YouTube, aren't they? Like, what, as long as that? I don't load it. YouTube has a bunch of weird requirements around guns.
Yeah, load it, and there's some other requirements around, not modifying or repairing and things like that.
Yeah, but so look for it once I pick it up. Look for it in a future video.
Cool.
Hey, you got me to buy another goddamn gun. I can't believe you did this.
How did I get you to buy a gun?
You got me on this whole topic.
I don't think that's how that went.
No, pretty much, because you said, what else do you want to talk about? And that got me to buy a gun.
No, what gets you to buy a gun is you're like, ooh, this will match my Adidas.
Yeah, I got some really nice Adidas shoes that just came in. So I got them in red and white. And so that matched both the red tracksuit and the white tracksuit. Now I need to get a red version of a gun for the red tracksuit. These are what the kind of problems that YouTubers have. Streamer problems.
How is that? I'm not a streamer, so I wouldn't know.
No, because you gotta look cool. That's the thing.
Yeah, because tracksuits are so cool.
Well, they are for my demographic.
And on that note,
I heard of somebody opening a beer already.
Well, we're wrapping up, so yes.
You are opening a beer. Okay, guys, we'll catch you all in about a week, give or take.
Cruising down a back road, strapped a heavy load. My trusty old sidekick, we're on the outlaw road. Dust clouds rising, sun beating on all our skin. A couple good old boys never let the law win. Moonshine and a trunk, a shotgun by our side. Dukes of Hazzard on this wild and crazy ride. Jumping over rivers, taking chances every day. Rebel hearts and southern pride, that's the Hazzard way. Riding on the outlaw road, breaking all the rules we